Oh, no, not getting up. No, I'm too tired. No, you're not. That's just a story you're telling yourself. How many hours sleep did I get? No, don't count the hours. It's all in your head. You've had plenty. Just get up, you know you'll feel better for it. Okay, five, four, three, two. Just 5 minutes sleep. What's the time now? Oh my God, it's like 5 hours later. Sim, you're so stupid and pathetic. What the hell? Like, now you're just gonna feel really shit for the rest of the day. You're really, really stupid, Sim, you know that.
My name's Simran, and welcome to Untangled, the podcast where we'll take a deep dive into topics to try and gain a better understanding of the world. The topics that we think about but don't necessarily talk about. I hope you enjoy.
Hi everyone, you probably think I'm really crazy, but today I'm talking about the internal dialogue. So if you're new here, welcome to Untangled. This is a bit of a different episode because I'm actually just talking to the mic. On my own, and usually I do have a guest, but I thought the internal dialogue would be a fitting topic because it is literally just me talking to myself, as we all do. I think we all do talk to ourselves in our heads, except I'm just kind of speaking out loud. So yeah, this is going to be a bit of a monologue. It kind of scares me that people listen to this on one time speed. I think if you don't know, there's actually a way that you can listen to this faster, and it's probably more beneficial if you do listen to it at like a 1.5 to 2 times speed, just to speed up my voice and so that it's a bit shorter, the podcast, first of all. And I think also if you listen to a podcast faster, actually the ideas link up better because your short-term memory can remember what they've said at the start of the sentence and then link it up to the end of the sentence. So actually, you might actually retain more if you listen to it at a slightly faster speed where you can still like understand the words. And yeah, I think I just wanted to talk about the internal dialogue because the internal dialogue is something that, well, I mean, it's that little voice in your head. It's always there. And some of you might be thinking, like, what little voice? I don't have that little voice. This girl is crazy. But yeah, that's the voice. So yeah, I think it's something that's always with us. And a lot of the modern wisdom that we read in articles or self-help books, yoga, meditation, all this stuff that we are taught is going to be really, really helpful for our well-being, and even more evidence-based interventions like cognitive behavioral therapy. All of that stuff is really about kind of gaining more control of and regulating that internal dialogue, or well, the way we think. So I guess it's a really important thing that we have. And I guess the internal dialogue came from, and we evolved to have this internal dialogue. It's really important in planning and problem solving, but it's also important in regulating emotions, and it's important in our self-image that we have of ourselves and our self-reflection. And so whilst the internal dialogue was meant to be adaptive, I think in the modern day society it can be quite maladaptive, and even though it's something that is designed to protect us, sometimes it doesn't always have our best interests at heart. But yeah, I quite like this concept because I think when we talk about the mind, we don't really conceptualize it in terms of like this dialogue so much. But really it is a moment-to-moment conversation that we have with ourselves. And I think if we can have better conversations with ourselves, then that would be a really big thing in terms of increasing our quality of life. So I think I'm just going to talk about what the self-help realm has to say about this internal dialogue, because it's been covered there quite a bit. And I want to just talk about the different viewpoints on this internal dialogue and how we should approach it. And then I was going to just go on to talk about a bit more about like my personal experience with the internal dialogue and how little things that I've used or found helpful in terms of having better conversations with myself, whether it's getting out of bed in the morning, fighting with ourselves, weighing up different decisions, going round and round in our head, whether it's deciding whether to speak up at a lecture or networking event, or even deciding how we feel about ourselves that day. The internal dialogue is something that's always quite relevant. So firstly, I wanted to cover what the books have to say about this internal dialogue and how they suggest that we should approach it, because there are a couple of different approaches. They say that, well, a lot of them call it the inner critic. And I guess that's accurate in the sense that it does call you horrible names sometimes. This like inner critic, you'd never be that critical of somebody else, but yet we're probably the most critical about ourselves. And some people say there's two approaches, so you can treat it as an enemy to be fought against, overcome. Or the other approach is to treat it as an ally to be befriended and transformed. I think I would be more drawn to the second approach of your internal dialogue as an ally to be transformed. I think if you try to fight it, and in meditation, if you've ever tried it, when the guided meditation person says, let your mind wander free and don't try to like constrain it. That's when your mind completely goes blank. It's like when you stop fighting the thing, then it's like no longer a fight and then you can like get some peace. So I like the second approach, because if you're fighting it, then surely like you have this inner dialogue your whole life, 100%, like most of the time. So you wouldn't really want to be fighting your whole life. Another thing that they say is that talking to yourself in the third person can be quite helpful. So saying like, oh, I'm so stupid. And then maybe saying, Simran, like, why did you say that? Or, I mean, it sounds crazy saying this out loud, but yeah, you know, like talking to yourself in this third person and having some empathy for yourself. I think one thing I noticed that I actually do is I'm like, Sim, why are you being so mean? I kind of say that to myself quite a bit. And so that's just an element of remembering to be kind to yourself, and treat yourself as you would another person. So taking it out of the first person and talking to yourself in the third person. Okay, so I think we spoke a bit about what the internal dialogue is and what the self-help realm has to say about what it is and how we should treat it as an ally, transform it, and maybe practice talking to ourselves in the third person, being kind to ourselves. But like, what does all of that mean practically? How can we help ourselves think better? And this is an ongoing thought process, I suppose. So I had a little brainstorm. I came up with the things I've read, the things I've personally practiced that have helped me. So yeah, let's dive into those things. And if you find any good nuggets out of any of it, not all of it all vibe with you, but you might find like one nugget, which is cool. Number one, I think personally for me, the thing that's had the biggest impact, I think, on my internal dialogue is having a gratitude diary. I started this in 2013. I got the idea off Instagram, actually, weirdly, and it was a little bit of a game because you'd write like something you were grateful for, something good that happened that day on a little sheet of paper, and then you'd put it in a jar. And then at the end of the year, you would read, like, you'd have 365 sheets of paper, which said like nice, happy memories on it. So it was like a little bit of a game. And I wrote in it every day for about a year. And I've done it ever since, not every day, but kind of sporadically. But I think that really massively changed the way I think and the things that I focus on throughout the day. And I didn't really look at the science of it until more recently, because I know personally it helped me, but I wasn't sure if this was like a universal experience or whether this was something for everyone. Yeah, so looking at the science of it, there have been some studies actually now in positive psychology, starting from about the 2000s, because I think before that the psychology realm focused on studies on negative emotions like anxiety, but more recently they've started focusing on things like gratitude. But there was a study with the different groups. One of the groups had to write a letter to somebody that they were grateful to and then deliver it to them. Another group had to write a gratitude diary, and they found that the quality of life for the group who had to write and deliver a letter of gratitude to someone in their life, they had the biggest short-term increase in happiness when it compared to gratitude journaling. So they were like on a high, these people who did this thing, and that high lasted for about a month. And I thought, when I read that, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, because like It's such a simple and small thing. It doesn't cost anything and it'll make you happier for up to 30 days, which I think is pretty cool. So that got me thinking actually that maybe that's something I should do, is show gratitude to two people in my life, because I wrote this gratitude journal. It was more things I was grateful for throughout my day, but I don't know if I actually show gratitude enough to the people in my life. So that was a really, really interesting point that I read in that study. And it's so cool that you can do this little thing and it will make you happy for about a month, and obviously it's going to make the other person happy, so it's like a win-win. So yeah, I think that's something that I'm going to take more on board. So yeah, it gives you a high showing gratitude to other people, definitely. And the other thing I found was that, so whilst that gave you a big high, gratitude journaling had the longest lasting effect on happiness. So the participants were told to write down three things they were grateful for every day for just 1 week, and they found that the benefits of the treatment lasted for 6 months after treatment began. But a lot of the participants actually carried on the exercise because they found it quite beneficial. So they carried it on longer than the week that they were said to do it for. I think there were some other studies that said that it was slightly less effective for people with mild or moderate depression. So perhaps for certain people, it more like intensive interventions are more beneficial. So maybe something like face-to-face therapy. But when it comes to gratitude journaling, I guess there aren't any side effects that are negative that come from it. And then if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty, should we be journaling daily, weekly, monthly? Well, they found that daily journaling increases your overall level of happiness more than if you do it weekly. However, weekly journals might be better because you could adapt to the beneficial effects of daily journaling. I guess, you know, weekly, daily, every other day, whatever works for you, like as long as you're doing some sort of practice of gratitude. I think for me, I started off every day because I wanted to make it a habit, and I think if I did it every other day, I'd forget more often than not. So it was easier to just go all in and just do it every day. But I have friends who do it weekly and that works better for them. So I do it slightly less now, but I think having done it a lot in the past has changed the way I think throughout the day anyway, and I think it has had that kind of long-term effect on me personally. I actually started this thing called Rosebud Thorn recently, which I listened to on a Happy Habits podcast. So Rosebud Thorn is a concept that where you write the rose, so the rose is something good that happened in your day and something that you're grateful for, and then you write the thorn, so something that bad that happened and something that you're not so grateful for, and then you write the bud, so something you're looking forward to. And I really like that because I think whilst I found the gratitude journal really, really beneficial, I started to also kind of want to express, I think it's sometimes healthy to express the bad things that happen. And if you do it in that framework, then it's kind of like the internal dialogue, you're treating it as an ally, because even though it might say negative things, you're acknowledging that negative thing, and then you're thinking about something that you're looking forward to. So Rose Thorn Bud, it's a nice idea. I've actually started using it with friends and family, so we kind of just say to each other, what was your Rose Thorn Bud of the day? And it's quite a quick, meaningful way to engage with someone you're close to. Okay, so that's gratitude. Second point is optimizing your environment for a better internal dialogue. So that can be the physical environment, or it could be a virtual environment. So I guess first talking about the physical environment, for me, I used to have, like, you know, just making your environment nice, like having pictures up on the wall of good vibes or quotes on the wall. I used to have like a big poster quote at my first year of university, because that really helped me focus on good things, and I'd read it every morning. And another thing is planning each day the night before, and kind of each hour, because then I think the next day it frees up your mind and you don't have this decision fatigue, and your internal dialogue is not constantly fighting with itself with what to do, because I know it can get like that some days. So planning each day the night before, and trying to make your, so yeah, just like planning your environment to kind of have a positive internal dialogue. Another thing you could have is like a theme of the week. So what am I going to focus on this week? And just reminding yourself of that every so often. Another one is the virtual environment. So that really has an impact on your internal dialogue. So that's like things like Instagram, Twitter, social media, all that. Because that, as I think we all know, can have a really negative impact on our internal dialogue. I was actually thinking about this recently because about which apps bring me most joy. And I have to say, I think Snapchat used to bring me a lot of joy because it was literally just like chatting to your friends. The bar for posting a pic was so low. It wasn't a highlight reel. It was just a funny app. I think Instagram, the bar for posting is a little too high. Maybe people are a little bit too serious on that and the pictures have to be so sheeny, shiny, perfect. So I do think for me, like Instagram is a bit of a drain sometimes. But then if you follow, if I follow pages that like actually bring me joy, like some pages do genuinely bring me joy. I like seeing my friends' arts pages, for example. Like I love seeing art and I love seeing people like show off their talents because I think that's so nice to just see people really be happy in that way. I followed like loads of meme pages and they do bring me short-term happiness and laughter, but I'm still kind of trying to decide whether the long-term benefits of that overall, because then you can just end up scrolling for ages. But you know, there are some really cute like cat memes and dog memes and baby memes. But yeah, overall I think optimizing the virtual environment, because we're spending more and more time in that virtual environment rather than the physical environment these days, which is a bit scary but it is true. So consuming good content that makes you happy, it can be really addictive to consume the content that you know doesn't make you happy but you feel like you're missing out. I think that's what a lot of people have, and I probably have as well. It's like, oh, I'm gonna miss out, but I don't know if that missing out is worth the kind of negative emotions that kind of stuff can bring. Also, like creating picture folders of stuff that will make you happy, like having a happy folder or your go-to folder, you know, so when you're sad you just go to this folder and it makes you happy. I've written down here that, and the third thing, the quality of your life directly correlates with the quality of questions you ask yourself. And I think that's true. It's stuff like, why am I here? Like, why me? Versus, how do I get out of this situation? Or if it's exams, like, why am I so unprepared? Versus, what can I do from this day forward to best prepare that I can? Or why does such and such have such a better life? Versus, what can I be grateful for? I think one thing for me that has really boosted my happiness, attitude, quality of life over the last few years is because me and my friends have had to sit exams for like nearly the last 10 years in a row, every year, exams all the time. So I used to not think that exams period was a happy time of life, and happy times of life happens in the summer. If I think like that, then I'm going to be unhappy like for most of my life. And that's just not a way I want to live. But I think in the end, when it comes to a day of studying, one thing I have like a mantra to myself is, I'm so lucky to be in this position and I'm really lucky to be learning, rather than seeing it as a chore, switching it, just like having that little mental switch. It's an instant mood booster and it's just something so little, but I think the hard bit is just reminding yourself to do that little switcheroo on your brain. But little reminders on your wall, post-it notes, that kind of thing can help if you notice a really persistently negative thought that you're having that just isn't serving you very well. Okay, so fourth thing I think is having a troubleshooting algorithm. Sometimes I know for me, I can get into negative thought spirals and I know that I need something to break it before it just goes too far. So having a troubleshooting algorithm can be helpful. I didn't really call it that before, but I'm calling it that for this podcast because it's quite a nice way to frame it as like a troubleshooting algorithm. So you think, okay, I have this problem. Okay, I got this from a friend who has this energy matrix. So basically what that means is they have problem in one column and then solution in the other. And it's designed to, if there's any points of low energy, they figure out what the problem is and then what the solution is, such that for any situation or any problem, there's a solution in place. So for example, it could be lack of energy in the evening. If you're feeling a lack of energy in the evening, what do? Power nap. Or lack of concentration. If you find a lack of concentration, then the solution is to have a conversation with someone and then you'll be able to refocus better. Another thing is like afternoon slumps in energy, like after lunch, you can feel really like groggy. So instead of having a light lunch or standing at the desk. So producing your own troubleshooting algorithm for different problems that you come across can be useful. Because like, you know, when you're in like this slump or negative state and then you do something that makes you feel better and then that's there, fine for that moment, but then you forget what you did to make yourself feel better. So in those times, just writing down what you did to make yourself feel better, and then you know, like the next time you feel that way, then you have a go-to kind of solution. So yeah, I think the troubleshooting algorithm is a nice concept because it's unique to each person. If you notice that you keep encountering the same problem, identifying that problem, and then if you happen to come up with a solution one day, making sure you don't just forget that solution, but writing it down and then knowing next time what to do. So yeah, those are the four main things. Training the internal dialogue with a gratefulness diary. So essentially living life grateful that you don't have a toothache. I like that. The second thing is optimizing your environment with continual prompts for a better internal dialogue. So be it a virtual environment, the physical environment, there are different things you can do in both realms. And then the third thing is the quality of life correlates with the quality of the questions you ask yourself. So just check the questions you're asking yourself and think, how can I transform this question into something that's going to help me? And then the fourth thing is have a place where you can visit this stuff. Create your own troubleshooting algorithm for problems that you see appear in life and potential solutions for those things. I want to caveat and say that those are all the four things that I've spoken about are things that we can do to help ourselves. But in some situations, our internal dialogue is really overpowering and we literally just can't overcome it ourselves. And in those situations, just remember there's always someone there for you, friends or family, or even to go see your GP. Is something that's really important not to forget that you can do. In terms of what the self-help realm has to say about it, well, there's loads of books which talk about treating the internal dialogue like an ally that you have to transform and befriend, and talking to yourself in the third person, being kind to yourself and talking to yourself how you would to another person. So those are my thoughts on the internal dialogue. I'm sure you guys must have a lot of thoughts yourself on the internal dialogue. How critical are you of yourself? How much do you beat yourself up? And what kind of things can you do to stop yourself from doing that and be more kind to yourself? So thank you so much for listening, everyone. I hope you have a really great week. And if you have any ideas or topics that you want to get covered, if you have any advice, then let me know. And if you liked it, then ratings on the App Store are always appreciated. And thanks everyone for listening. I hope you have a really great week. Bye.